You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms and the new 110 Ultralight. At about 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel makes it durable and lightweight. The rifle comes equipped with the Savage AccuFit technology, so that means it's adjustable and it comes in a variety of calibers. The 308, the 270, the 28 Nosler, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 30-06, and much more. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome, folks, to the Freshwater Bite Podcast, your source for everything freshwater fishing. I'm your host, Lee Kleino, and on this podcast, you will hear from diehard anglers like yourself, the backstories of those anglers, techniques they use, gear reviews, and everything in between. So if you like fishing, turn it up, because this episode's about to kick off right now. Hey, we're back. We're here again for another podcast episode, and so are you. Thank you for being here. This is episode number 52, and my guest today is Brian Eby. This podcast episode is a little bit different. Brian is someone who I feel is a very good photographer, and I wanted to get him on the podcast because, as we know, as popularity has grown in the past, and it continues to grow with Instagram and social media, you know, I feel that this is the positive and the optimistic side of me, that photography has really brought and shown and told stories of, my fellow anglers and hunters in the field, you know, maybe bring new light to the mainstream, or folks who have never known too much about hunting and fishing in the past have now maybe seen on Instagram, through good photos and good storytelling through photos, you know, what it's all about, and maybe hopefully change their perspective and get more folks into fishing or into hunting. Just my opinion, just my optimism. But anyways, I picked up a camera probably, 2 years ago. Listen, my photos are nothing compared to Brian's. I'm not that good of a photographer, but I enjoy learning and pushing myself to become a better photographer. And I think I wanted to have Brian on the podcast to kind of tell his story about how he got into it. Brian hasn't been, you know, doing photography for that long, but he's shot way up super fast, in my opinion. And he is taking photos with some of the most famous bass anglers in the world. And it'd be great if you guys could listen to his story, because I think you're going to find it very intriguing. And I want Brian to kind of break down the process and kind of the things that he learned throughout, you know, learning to shoot photography, and what he has found helpful, lenses, bodies, all that kind of stuff, and what cameras to get, and also how to go through the camera and the different settings and what you need to adjust to take that perfect photo. So without any further ado, give it up for my friend, Brian Eby. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
There you are.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. How about you?
Good. All right. Well, you know, I just want to say, first off, thank you for agreeing to do this. This is something I think I've been wanting to do for a long time, to get someone on here with, especially with, you know, the significance of more and more folks getting into, you know, trying to take higher quality photos and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And, I'm super amateur when it comes to any type of photography, but I thought it'd be good to get somebody on here who I feel is way, you know, way above me and of my expertise, and you could help us all out and understand it a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I appreciate that. I still feel like I'm a pretty novice, but
oh man, if anyone listening to this, they need to go to your Instagram, because I think your Instagram is pretty dope, and it's Brian Eby _photo. Anybody listening right now, head on out there and check them out. But before we get too far down that rabbit hole, tell everybody, you know, a little bit about yourself and where you kind of grew up and how you got into fishing.
Yeah, so my name's Brian Eby, from Lansing, Michigan. Grew up fishing. We had a cottage up in Ionia, so I grew up fishing just for largemouth bass off the dock. We have pictures of me dragging around stringers when I was younger. So, just bass and crappie and bluegill. So, kind of got that passion from there. And then I kind of lost it in high school. I was kind of more focused on other things and, things that kids in high school do. And then, got into college and, I met someone, I played football in college and I had a teammate who was a huge fisherman. Who's actually a guide now up in Alpena.
Oh, no shit. And where'd you play at?
Central Michigan.
Oh, wow.
I was a kicker there, and just so happened that the other kicker there was a fisherman. So
nice.
He got me back into it and, been pretty much addicted ever since.
Dude, I'm kind of right there with you. And I grew up fishing a ton, you know, as a kid. And there was like a period in high school, like you said, like maybe my freshman, sophomore year, a little bit of my junior year, where I kind of lost the, I don't know, just so much going on with sports and everything else. And then, I started to, you know, to fish Erie more and more for walleye my junior and senior year. And then, you know, ever since then, it's been a progression into what it is now. But I feel you. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I still fished in high school and hunted, but I didn't do it as much as I look back and I regret not doing it as much, but,
right.
I've definitely made up for it now cause I do it all the time or whenever I can. So,
You seem like a bass dude for sure, but maybe even a little bit more into smallmouth now.
Yeah. I've always been ever since I've caught smallmouth, which I was younger when I did before high school. But then in college, there was a river by Mount Pleasant, Chippewa River, and it's full of smallmouth.
Yeah.
They're not very big, but it's full of it. And I just, ever since that point, I've been addicted to it. So then moving up to Traverse City, it's been pretty, pretty special. So,
oh man, you're in the Mecca now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. It's the hardest decision I have is just to, decide where I'm going to go.
Yeah,
for the lake.
There's a lot of body of water to break down up there.
Yeah. Like I have a hard time pick what lake I want to go and fish.
So, you know, everybody listening to this kind of knows, but I was up in Traverse City for 5 years.
Yep.
I think you and I just missed each other. Didn't you just recently move up there?
Yeah. Two years ago.
Yeah.
So, 2 years this winter.
Yeah. So I just moved back downstate last summer. Back to my hometown, and my wife and I and our two little girls came back down to kind of be closer to the family and whatnot. But man, we love living up there. And, you know, when I was up there, I got pushed out of my comfort zone because coming up from Lake Erie kind of area, and then coming up to all that clear water up there and, you know, to go after different species like, you know, smallmouth and lake trout and salmon, all that kind of stuff. I think it definitely pushed me to become a better angler in, you know, different diverse bodies of water.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot tougher than I've ever experienced. I mean, I grew up in Lansing, so all the water's pretty, pretty dirty, and, going up there and trying to catch fish in 50 foot of water. Sometimes, I mean, we've caught them out in 60 feet of water and, you know, that's out of my comfort zone. That's out of a lot of people's comfort zone. You got to be able to fish in 60 foot of water where it takes a minute to get down to the bottom. So it's definitely had its challenges, but there's a lot of rewards if you get out of your comfort zone in anything in life, but
yeah,
especially in fishing. So,
you know, one of my funnest inland lakes to fish up there was, I was just down the road from it, maybe a mile, if that was South Lake Leelanau.
Okay.
So had a great time on there with, it's a great, you know, diverse fishery with walleye, smallmouth, pike, perch. We're getting big in there.
Yep.
That's
a fun lake.
Yeah, if you've never fished there before, I would highly suggest it.
It's not bad. There really is a ton of great lakes around there. And, you know, even the small little largemouth lakes around there that no one seems to go and fish, they're unbelievable. I mean, they're not giant bass, but they're just lots of them, and there's no fishing pressure because the smallmouth lakes get hit. So
right.
I like to explore. I'm a big explorer. So when it comes to fishing and, I like to try different bodies of water.
The fun thing too about smallmouth for me. I fished them a lot downstate too, in the rivers, like in the Raisin River and Maumee and things like that. Mm-hmm. They're like, you said that, you know, they didn't get very big for you over in Lansing, but regardless, they always put up a great fight.
Oh, they're one of the best. Where I grew up, it's a small town near DeWitt, but just outside of Lansing, and there's a little river called the Looking Glass River, and there's smallmouth in that, and that's what I grew up fishing too. And man, they do put up a fight. No matter a 1 pound bass, and then you hook a 3 pounder, and it fights just like a 5 or 6 pounder up north. It's something with that current and those little bodies of water and not being pressured. So,
right. Yeah.
That's pretty special.
Yeah. That's the other thing too, is, you know, going after them in river systems. I would assume most people know that they are in the rivers, but a lot of people might not know. It's a fun way to chase them, is in the river. You know, that's, especially if you're going after whatever, trout someday, and you can start to learn to, it's a good way to learn how to read the river too, of like where these fish are hanging and, you know, why they're in those deeper pockets. Why are they, you know, in
the eddies?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, exactly. And that helped me a lot.
A little with my slack water.
Yep, exactly. And that helped me with my river fishing up north, you know, for salmon or whatever I was going for up in that area. So.
Yeah. Just finding out how they relate in a river system. I mean, usually all the fish that are active, like a trout or a smallmouth or a salmon, they're going to kind of act the same or be in the same areas, maybe at different times of the year, but needing different baits, but they're going to act pretty much the same. So I usually just look for slack water or, you know, some kind of hard cover.
Oh yeah.
It's usually a current break or something like that.
Yep. I'd like to try them on a fly rod too. I know I've heard that was been, you know, a lot of fun.
I took out a buddy. He caught a couple off of beds this year up there, which was pretty cool.
Oh really? Wow.
Nothing big, but yeah. Yeah. So that was cool. He wanted to see if he could do it, and he ended up doing it, which was really cool.
Good for him. Have you ever tried it on a fly rod or no?
No. I would say I've fly fished twice before in my life. So,
okay.
And one was down on the, in the ocean. So.
Yeah. It's one of my personal goals for 2021 is I got to try to pick up a fly rod. I've had a couple different podcasts where I've had some guests on here and they've challenged me and encouraged me to get out there and do it. So I told myself this year I'm going to do it.
Good for you. Yeah. It's, me and my wife went on our honeymoon. We call them bonefish, which is really cool.
Oh yeah.
Which I guess is like really sought after in the fly fishing community. But, I don't know, man, you can't beat a smallmouth on a bait casting rod, really.
Yeah, exactly. What's your favorite way to go for them? Like, you know, your favorite time of year, your bait, or you talk a little bit about
definitely,
that.
My favorite time of year is definitely in the spring.
Okay.
It just seems like they're super active and it's getting warmer instead of colder. So it's getting easier to catch them instead of vice versa. As of now, it goes from a hard time of year, at least for me, to there's like a little window in the fall where they're eating a lot, which was this past weekend. But in the spring, it's usually good for months on end. But I love spinnerbait when it's windy or a drop. I love a drop shot. Big, spinning reel fisherman for sure. A lot of guys like them on the bait caster, which I do for certain things, but that spinning reel is just fun.
I love the drop shot too, especially like you were saying in that springtime or when that water's super clear, especially, I don't know if I don't think you have, but when I was up there, there was two winters in a row, actually three winters where the bays froze over, which is kind of somewhat rare up there. I mean, it's gotta be pretty cold, but anyways, when that ice would break up and, you know, it would still be late May, you know, early June, that water's still ice cold and you haven't got too much wind yet. That water was like crystal, like beyond clear. Like it's clear right now, obviously all the time, but it's like really, really clear. And to sight fish for them and throwing drop shots at them and just seeing that aggressive nature, like you said, if you can get them up in the shallows or on those rocky shoals and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
It was a blast.
Yeah. Being able to just visually see them that's probably my favorite way with a drop shot, finesse fishing them in the shallows.
Yeah.
You can just watch that black streak just moving across, coming to eat your bait. And you just get to watch everything visually.
Right.
See how they react. And if you're not doing something right, then you can adjust. But yeah, that water's pretty unbelievable, especially I'll fly my drone up quite a bit when we're on some clearer water, and it's just cool to see all the contour changes or the color changes in the water. Just anything. Sometimes, I mean, I've seen fish get caught off beds, and it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. So how did you get into the photography side of things? Like, when did you pick up the camera for the first time, or have you always been into photography?
No, I mean, I haven't really ever been in photography. The past, I'll say 3 years, I kind of got interested in, about 2 years ago, I think it was about 2 years, 2.5 years ago, I was with a buddy. We were trout fishing and, up in the Pigeon, State Forest up in Gaylord area.
Oh yeah.
And we went out and it was just an awesome day. It was beautiful out, kind of like this past weekend, just warm and perfect temperature. We went and caught a bunch of brook trout, and then on our way out, you know, the sun was setting, and we looked into this field, and there's elk up there. There's wild elk up in the Gaylord area.
Yep, I know exactly where it's at.
Yeah, and we saw one. And I just, like, that moment right then and there, I was like, I need to have a camera. I have to get one tomorrow. Like, I bought one the next day online on eBay. And I was like, I need to be able to take a picture of that. So ever since that moment, the next day I went online, bought the cheapest base camera I could get, which I still have and use.
Which is what?
Canon T6.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I love that thing.
That's a workhorse for a lot of people getting into photography.
Yeah. I don't think it's a great camera. There's certain limitations you have, and that's about it. Just in terms of your ISOs and stuff like that, and shutter speeds, and really just the ISOs. But so since that time, since that moment, literally that moment, I still remember it all the time, and that just solidified that I wanted a camera. And I never thought I would be taking pictures of, say, Kevin Van Dam or Mark Zona, or filming for certain people, or the Bassmasters. I didn't even think I'd ever film, but I bought that camera solely for taking pictures of wildlife, and I did that every single day. I went out and took pictures of deer in my parents' property when I was living at home, and just it kind of just grew from there. Started taking pictures of random products for hunting and fishing, and kind of went up from there. But yeah, and hindsight, or not hindsight, but in correlation with going out and looking for wildlife right before deer season, I ended up finding giant bucks in our property and pattering them just from taking pictures of them. So that was really cool.
Oh, nice. You're just out there spending a lot of time in the field, and you learned a lot, eh?
Yeah, I learned a ton. I mean, I learned a ton about just watching. I mean, I used to go in the winter and just sit and watch ducks and just take pictures of them and watch how they act, and knew when they were going to fly, knew when they were going to, you know, flap their wings and just get out of the water. I knew when they were going to do like their little bird bath, I guess, in the water. They splash water on their back, and then they get up and flap their wings to dry off. It was just cool to watch interactions like that. And I solely bought it just to have pictures of wildlife, just to have those memories.
And you threw out some big names there. We can't blow by that. So I got to hear, how in the hell did that progress into, like, did you know KVD ahead of time or before, or how did that happen?
No, I knew just through family, friends, and through their boys. They fished in there's a bass fishing circuit that I used to do in college. We had like a bass fishing club there, and I was kind of in charge of it with a couple other buddies. And I met Zona's son through that, and it kind of just blossomed from there. I went and just took pictures of them one time. And turned out Mark was there. So then we talked and, kind of formed a relationship. And, then from there, I just started, trying to promote myself on social media. And, a couple months later, after working with Zona and with his kids, I kept on trying to reach out to Kevin, 'cause I would see he was up north. In Traverse, and I was like, hey, I live here. I'll just come out and let me just take some pictures. I know exactly what I'm doing. And really, I had no idea.
You had no idea.
No, nothing. I had no idea what I was doing with my camera. But I was like, I can do this. And then after about a year, I finally got in touch with them. And then I started working with both of them kind of around the same time. And it just kind of went up from there. Now I'm good friends with both of them and their families. And shooting with Mark on this Friday. Doing some stuff for his show, and it's just crazy what stepping outside your comfort zone can do. Meeting people. I mean, I remember. Sorry, I'm jumping all over the place.
No, keep jumping.
Crazy mind.
I'm intrigued as hell. So keep going.
Yeah. So I remember I still have a picture on my phone about 6 years ago. We were at a fishing show in Grand Rapids, and I said, I helped run
the ultimate fishing show.
I helped run the Central Bass Club. We, quote unquote, the vice president. And we ran the show there, and Kevin came up to our booth and met all the college anglers. Man, I didn't say a word to that guy. And it's just surreal that picking up a camera to take pictures of elk turned into me being friends with him and his family and Zona and all these other opportunities. It's weird to think about.
That's wild, man. But like you said, it's weird how it works. It's those leaps of faith, like you said, outside your comfort zone. And
yeah,
man, I'll tell you what, giving you an example of this podcast. When I started, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And I didn't know who my guests would be. I didn't know. I mean, the people that I've talked to, many who I have followed or have idolized growing up, things like that. And, a lot more more so in the walleye world for me, but just to get to talk to them and reaching out and sending a message to see if they would reply, and they would get back to me. I'm like, holy shit, they got back to me. No. Now I actually got to get my shit together and, interview them. But, it's moments like that. If you don't do it, I think the regret would be a lot more looking back on it later on down the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. Now that you said, I remember the exact scenario of how I got in touch with, or kind of how my name got brought up to Mark, and just coincided with me going and taking pictures at his house. But the first time I went and messaged a guy named Jim Root. He has a TV show named Real Bragging Rights.
Okay. Is that Michigan based or what?
No, New York.
Okay.
New York. It's on the Sportsman's Channel.
Okay.
And he gave me my first real opportunity. He's like, hey, do you want to come film for me for my TV show? I was like, what the heck? I was like so nervous. I called my buddy. I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do here. And obviously I said yes. And I went and helped film say 2 minutes of the TV show. I had no idea what I was doing. I thought I was going to end up just taking pictures most of the time, which I did.
Did you film with your DSLR or did you bring a certain type of camera for that?
I brought mine.
Okay.
But I had a 5D at this time.
Okay.
I just got one. But it's not really the best for filming. It works for certain things, but it's not the best for filming. But I ended up using his camera, which was a Lumix GH5. It's a mirrorless.
Yep.
Lumix. But
I'm familiar.
Yeah. But anyways, I did that and took. I took 5,000 pictures in a day.
Ooh.
And I sent him 400. So, there's so many you go through and you're like, I don't like those. I like those. And, he's like, I only ever get 10 from people or whatever, 10 to 20. I was like, well, I like taking pictures.
I was rapid fire, buddy. I was just firing.
Yeah. Just firing away. But, and then from there, it just blossomed into him telling Zona about me, cause he knew him. He's buddies with him. And, then the connection was made between the, family members and me. And, but yeah, that's how it really got blossomed was Jim Russo. I owe a ton of credit to that guy. I still help him now with, certain companies, and he runs, Stormar. And then, some other companies he runs their social media for. So, but yeah, he's helped a ton just getting into it. But yeah, it's been pretty fun.
Next week,
I'm actually heading to shoot the Bassmaster College bracket.
So you're freelancing now then, right?
on like when I can get the days off of my full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in the future.
Okay.
Maybe I might be just a freelancer, but I don't know. Who knows? I never planned on doing any of this, so it's kind of just take it as it comes.
I got you.
Kind of deal, but.
Well, no, you got to jump on these opportunities no matter how big or small, right? Because you're still,
yeah, exactly.
Like you said, you're starting out and you're trying to, you know, what it sounds like you are, make a good name for yourself. And
yeah,
for, you know, you're already up there with, you know, the MJs in the, of the bass fishing world. So
which is pretty cool.
You're doing well there.
Yeah. And those guys, Zona and Kevin, those guys are, I mean, what you see on camera with Zona is exactly what you get all the time. And it's so funny. you don't stop laughing the whole time. And, which is cool to see. And then Kevin's just a genuine, just wants to help human being. Just a good dude.
That's good to hear, man, because sometimes you don't know. I mean, especially someone like Kevin Van Dam, who's, I mean, you know, Bass Pro sponsored and Nitro Boats and everything else. You're just like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. He's one just like everyone else. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
There's nothing different about him than say you or me, if we were going to all go get a beer, you wouldn't notice any difference. No cockiness at all. And, he's just a helpful dude. He just a good dude.
Well, that's good. Good to hear.
Some other cool people I got to meet, and I don't like just dropping names, but I thought you might think this is cool.
Drop
Kevin asked or told me that Luke Bryan and Johnny Morris were coming up to go fishing in Traverse Bay, so I got to meet them too.
Get the hell out of here!
Pretty cool. No,
I didn't know Luke Bryan fished, let alone came to Traverse City to fish.
Yeah, huge fisherman.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, and he was. Same thing. Him and Johnny are the nicest guys I've ever met. You know, with all the fame and whatever money they are and people they've met, they're down to earth.
So he's hunting and fishing and loving every day?
For sure. It was cool to
see that.
That's
a country song,
really,
everybody.
Really
if you
cool
don't know who Luke Bryan is, that's a country song. It's one of the ones he sings.
Yeah. They're really cool people.
Damn, dude. That's cool. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome moments.
So I want to kind of get into, or I guess before we do that, I got one more question. Mm-hmm. When did you know that, or what moment, I guess I should ask, when you were like, hey, I'm going to give this a lot of attention. I'm going to kind of go all in on this, you know, this new hobby of mine, if you want to call it that, when you had your Canon T6.
Yeah.
What was that moment, or was there like a photo or a photo session where you're like, yeah, I'm going to up my game here?
When my first time I had a company share a photo online, like Gander Outdoors.
Okay.
When they shared it, I was like, what the heck?
Can you walk us through that photo or what photo that was? Or,
yeah.
Or kind of to talk about the day of shooting it, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I was actually with, ironic enough, the same guy I was with that the day I decided I wanted to, get a camera when we saw the elk.
Okay.
And then I was with another good buddy and we went fishing on, or not fishing, we went waterfowl hunting on Saginaw Bay.
Oh yeah.
And the water was 33 degrees. And just remember this part because I had some waders on,
mm-hmm.
but they had holes. They had holes in them.
Oh yeah. I've been there, brother.
And we were standing out there, you know, waist deep, 33 degrees. I'm out there just taking pictures most of the time. It was foggy and he had a headlamp on and, the light just came through the fog perfectly. And I took a picture of him, you know, fake shooting at some ducks and it just turned out to be a really cool picture. And now I could, you know, not toot my own horn, but I think I could make it a lot cooler. But that one picture kind of, like you said, solidified my mindset of, hey, maybe I can do something with this. Maybe I can get a free t-shirt. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it was going to happen. I was just taking pictures for fun. And I was like, hey, maybe I can do something with this. And then I just started taking it more seriously, whether I was going to pursue it at all or not. But
cool.
Now I'm pretty much all in on it.
No,
that's for sure.
It's those moments. That's why I was curious to have you break it down where it's like,
yeah,
you know the details so well, and whatever that pursuit is in life, you're just like, you know what? I'm going to give it my all, or I'm going to give this a lot of attention and, you know, take it to the next level kind of thing.
Yeah. And I've never even thought about that. So thank you. It's cool to think about, but yeah, I've just, the other part is I've had a lot of good friends to help me out with pictures too. They take their time and, you know, we create stuff or take time out of our hunting or fishing just to take pictures. So
how did you learn the ins and outs of a camera, like finding your way around it? I'm shit compared to you, but what I have learned over the past year and a half, where I've found myself taking better photos in my mind, regardless what anybody thinks on social, but what clicked for me or what helped me was really living in manual mode.
Yep.
And forcing myself, even if I took crappy photos, to really say, why was that crappy? Okay, let me go back and figure out what I should have did differently. You know, I was watching YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. You know, I was really diving into the camera, basically, living with it. You know, it was always on me and I was taking crappy photos and, you know, learning from that. Kind of talk about how you learned how to do that, or I'm curious to hear about your process.
Yeah, so fortunately, my mother-in-law is a professional photographer.
Oh.
So okay. That is a huge, she does portraits and school photography and stuff like that, you know, like headshots. So she knows, you know, everything about manual mode. So she really helped me get started with my T6. She's a Canon shooter too. So, that's huge. I mean, she's been the reason why I learned all this stuff. And I started just automatic mode. I didn't even know what autofocus was first time I went out.
Okay.
I just started taking pictures of a deer and I was like, why is it blurry? It was really cool. I got like 10 feet or like 10 yards from a 10 point, but it was kind of blurry. So I was like, oh, I got to figure out what that is. And then she told me, you know, autofocus. And then I was like, oh, that's what that means. And then I got out of automatic and went to, I think it was TV. Which I don't use that stuff anymore, but, I really went kind of straight from automatic to manual. Like I said, she's been a huge help. She gave me a little booklet she has. She teaches a camera class and just to get the basics of a camera. And that helped a ton. And then another thing was YouTube, like you said, YouTube. I mean, I watch YouTube every day still.
Right,
and just, I try and learn one thing. And I still take terrible pictures all the time. It's not like every picture that comes out of my camera is great. I'm good at editing. Not fantastic, but pretty good. But
what do you use?
Lightroom.
Yeah, baby.
And I try and go in and out of Photoshop because the coloring's a little different on there too.
Okay.
So I'll edit in Lightroom and then go into Photoshop. And then you can do selective coloring, kind of just like in Lightroom. But it's a little bit, it's
I'm terrible at Photoshop, man. I'm so terrible.
Yeah.
I got to.
Oh, I'm.
That's something that's like when every time I open it, I'm like, damn, it's, I don't even want to learn it. Like, it's just too much for me, but maybe I need to get into it.
There's, I just watch a YouTube, just watch basics of Photoshop on YouTube. That's, I mean, I don't know much at all. I don't like to try and fake stuff. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple fake photos of, quote unquote composites, but I think they're just fake, and they turn out really cool. I'll use it to, you know, get rid of things on someone's face or, you know, something that, a blemish, but I'm not going to super alter the picture, or I try not to. Sometimes it's cool to, and knowing how to is a good tool to have.
Okay.
But I try and create stuff naturally, like with lighting and, just lighting in general and the scenes and, try and be creative in that aspect, but sometimes it is cool to have Photoshop to alter a picture, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's cooler to get it by creating it in its natural environment. But that's besides the fact. So learning, like I said, I went from automatic to manual, and then teaching camera classes, because I got pretty good pretty fast with it.
Mm-hmm.
something just clicked, or I just would mess with everything. Like I said, like you said, you take terrible pictures and then eventually you just start getting better and better. And like I said, I would go and watch ducks for 3 hours and take pictures of ducks in the snow. So just putting that time commitment into it is a huge part of it too. But YouTube is probably number two behind my mother-in-law of teaching me. I mean, Peter McKinnon, I don't know if you've watched him.
Oh yeah.
He's pretty popular, but yeah, he's pretty good at explaining it, you know, I guess, quote unquote, dumbing it down for everyone. I mean, it's just, he does some really good work on that. And then, that's the guy I watch the most. I still watch him.
He has a very great personality and easy to listen to.
Yeah, exactly.
And once you watch enough of his videos, you can kind of fast forward through the stuff where, you know, you're going to get into the meat and potatoes of whatever you're trying to learn. He's also a cannon shooter, I believe, still, right?
Yeah, which helps a ton.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you. Next question was,
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, let's give everybody, talk about the T6. Okay. So like, if I was brand new to photography, I'm going to go buy, a camera and I want to get into it. What would you recommend?
I would say the T6 or another base model, a kit lens is what they call, or a kit camera.
Okay.
A camera that comes with, you know, two or three different lenses, that kind of covers, you know, from wide angle to a telephoto. Definitely a T6, and I bought mine straight off of eBay, which is, you know, it can be risky. It's a camera, so there can be glass damage or whatnot, but, you know, I bought mine for $300. Sometimes I think they run like 700 now, like Best Buy or whatnot, but I would go with a kit camera. It'll cover all the bases. And once you can not really master it, you don't need to be a master of that camera. But once you understand the basics and, if you find out you're truly interested in it, then you can go and upgrade from there. I mean, if you're not gonna, you know, unless if you're not gonna try and invest into it or spend tons of time with it, there's no point to go up from there. But if you want to try and make something out of it, or just have a side hobby, or just a hobby in general, then yeah, you should upgrade into a more professional full frame instead of a crop sensor, which is the T6.
Right. Explain that to folks. So like what he's describing to you guys right now, when he says crop center or crop censored, you know, and then versus the full frame, that's when your price difference starts to go up significantly. So his entry level was a crop sensor. Kind of describe about, you know, why or what, how is that different?
I don't know. I guess the difference I know between the two is when you have a crop sensor, it's literally taking your picture and it's cropping it. So it's zooming in. So
right.
I have a lens that's a 70 to 200. If I put it on my full frame camera, it's a true 70 to 200. If I put it on my T6, it's 70 times 1.6.
Right.
And then 200 times 1.6, which can be very cool for zooming into stuff. It's a great way to cheaply get a bigger lens. That's the difference. I know that it's literally just taking your image and cropping it and quote unquote zooming in.
And do you see any difference in the quality of the photo? I mean, you are giving up some megapixels there, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The megapixels are lower. The biggest thing I see is the quality of the image.
Okay.
After you get to a certain point with ISO, which is just when I look at ISO, it's the brightness of the photo. That's how I look at it. It's turning up the brightness in your photo.
Right. Anybody listening to this, the way I kind of think about it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because again, you're probably, you got a better grasp on this than I do. It'd be like someone, you know, slowly brightening a light on whatever object that you have or you're interested in. So going up is going to make it, you know, a lot brighter, but then you're going to lose clarity on that at some point. If it's dark outside or dimmer outside and you're cranking out the ISO too much, that's when you start to see those photos that might be a little bit more grainy, right?
Yeah. It's like a dimming switch for like a light in your room. Right. So the higher your ISO, the brighter it's going to be.
Okay.
That's the best way to put it for, you know, in my mind.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
No.
I'm not the most technically sound photographer. There's going to be people that are super well in tune to what each thing is defined as, but that's just in my mind. It's turning up the lights. Theoretically, yeah.
Right. And this is really good because this is the kind of stuff I wanted to get into for anybody listening to this. In, you know, just rewinding a little bit, when we were talking earlier about, you know, learning how to shoot in a manual mode, can you tell everybody, you know, what you have control of or the three main things that you have control of in manual mode versus something like, I don't know, you know, aperture priority or automatic or whatever?
Right. So automatic in a camera is going to be the camera's deciding all the proponents of it for the f-stop, the shutter speed, and the ISO, which is your three main pillars. But when you go to manual, you have control over all three. So I think of it as like a stool, like a three-legged stool. If they all have to be in balance for you to properly sit on top of that stool.
Right.
So your shutter speed is, you think about, the faster your shutter speed is, the faster your subject can be moving. So if you want to capture a bird flying, your shutter speed is going to be, you know, 1/1,000. I'd probably be a little higher, but 1/1,000. And then if you want to shoot something like a landscape or a nighttime photographer or photo, you'd be at like 10 seconds. So it'd be the opposite way, which is going to absorb light for 10 seconds. And then the other aspect is when you're taking the picture of the bird, it's absorbing light for 1/1,000th of a second. And so it's capturing crisp movement. And then the other aspect, it's taking in light for 10 seconds.
Right.
So it's for 30 seconds or whatever you might have it at. And then the f-stop is kind of like, I think of it as my, as like, there's two ways to describe it. So there's one way is the lower your f-stop, I think of it as like an eye, like an opened or closed eye.
Yep.
So when your eyes barely open, that's your f-stop of like 1.8. And then as you slowly open your eye wider and wider, that's when your f-stop will go up, more light will come in, or not more light will come in, more light will be taken out. I'm not explaining this right.
Basically, you'd be able to see more. So like if you're after your f-stop of 1.4 or 1.8, it's like tunnel vision. But the more that you go up, the clearer that you can see outside of it. So, you know, if you're shooting a landscape, you kind of want your f-stop to be a little bit higher because you're trying to grab everything in that photo to be crystal clear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that's the way I think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to I shouldn't have put the light in there because, that's not right. It's just your depth of field.
Right.
Is what it is. So it's like nowadays you have portrait mode on your iPhone.
Right.
That's like a 1.8. And then you go to back to your normal mode on your iPhone. It's like a F10.
Right.
It's just your depth of field.
No, but you were right because anybody listening to this, anytime you change one of these three pillars that he was talking about, it affects the light of your photo in some way.
Yep.
And you'll be able to see that in real time on your screen. So you're like, all right, I'm going to dial my ISO up. Okay, now that photo's blown out. You know what I mean? Or if I f-stop down too much, it's getting too dark. You know what I mean? So like exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're talking about with the light and everything. Everything affects the photo. So that's why you have to really think about your subject or what you're trying to shoot before you go all in. And that's what, you know, help you cut your teeth. And that's what's helping me cut my teeth right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they all, like I said, it's a three seat stool or three pillars of photography of basics is that they all work together. So if one is blown out, you can say your ISO is up at like 3200 and you want to make it darker. You can either take the ISO down or you can mess with the other two pillars and try and even it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I've always thought of it as there's three pillars. And that's how I was taught by my mother-in-law is that they all work together. If one's out of balance, you can mess with the other two to get it back to a clean looking picture. Now, if certain things are too high, like your ISO, your picture is going to get very fuzzy and blown out and not have a good quality to it. The
Here's a selfish question for myself. You've been getting, well, I think, you know, some of your nighttime shots are really good. How do you get the focus to say, get the stars or whatever it is without the whole photo just being out of focus? Cause you got to have some kind of focus right before you take, take that photo. How do you do that?
Yes. So, I'll take a flashlight and I'll turn, cause I always use live view on my camera. That's another thing I'll want to talk about too, but
yeah,
I'll use live view. And if you don't have a touch screen, this will make it harder, but, take a camera wherever you want to focus, or not a camera, a flashlight, and focus your camera wherever that flashlight is or wherever you want to focus it, put your flashlight. And then once you get it focused, let go and turn it to manual focus immediately. So then you can turn your flashlight off and then you can take your picture for however long you need. So then you have that focus wherever you wanted it. Now, if you want to do the stars, I never do the stars because I always have a subject in it. But if you want to do the stars, you zoom, you can either go to live view and go to the zoom, which is the little magnifying glass,
right?
At least on my Canon, and zoom into a star and then try and use your touchscreen or your shutter button to focus on the star.
Okay.
I don't normally do that ever. I usually just, I have like a boat or a hunter or a truck or something and or a landscaped object where I'll focus on that.
I'm looking at one of your photos. You did good on the stars. Looks like a boat with two talons on there and you've got the sun setting and the stars in the background. Looks like Grand Traverse Bay.
That was actually South Lake Leona.
Oh, was it?
And we launched real quick just to get that picture. It was there's Comet Neowise in the top somewhere. It was just kind of smaller.
Yeah, but I can see it.
I focused on the boat, but if you turn your f-stop up enough, it'll focus. I mean, obviously the stars are really far, but it'll still give it a better focus than your f-stop at 2.8 or 1.8. But the biggest thing I can say is get a flashlight and use autofocus and then switch to manual focus, or use your flashlight, turn into manual focus, and then actually manual focus your subject into view.
Okay.
And then from there, I mean, you can play with the settings. And I normally start at like 30-second picture.
Okay.
At f-stop at like 5, and then ISO at like 800. Everyone has their different settings,
spots,
but I just start there. Yeah. I start there, and then, you know, if it's too much light or too much movement from a subject, then I'll try and go down. But another piece of advice for doing that, I do a thing called light painting.
Okay.
So once you start taking the picture, say for 10 seconds, I'll take a flash. You'll take your flashlight or any light you think of, and just like I just posted one of a truck.
Oh yeah, I see
in
it.
A field.
It looks like
it looks like there's
star.
A light going.
Yeah, like a shooting star is buzzing by you.
Yeah, that's just my phone. I just turned my phone on and I wanted to light paint the truck, and I turned my phone and didn't turn off the light in time, and it came out cool. So that's just doing stuff like that. I call that getting lucky, but just doing stuff like that and just messing with it. I mean, nighttime photography is fun because there's no right or wrong.
Right.
Like you do a portrait picture, there's usually a standard guideline or outline of it, but you go do night photography, there's nothing right or wrong with it. You get to be super creative with that. That's why it's one of my favorites to do. And then another one is, and sorry if I'm talking too much, but
no, that's what podcasts are for.
Yeah. Another one I like to do is, you know, like NASCAR shots with where everything's blurry, but the car.
Yeah.
Well, I try and incorporate that in anything, like someone walking in a field about to go hunting or whatever. I'll turn my shutter to like 1/40, 1/30, mess with it.
Okay.
And then you got to mess with the other two legs of, you know, the f-stop and the ISO. But then once you find your sweet spot in there, just start moving with the subject.
So you're following along with them.
Yep. Okay. Following along the subject. And whether you're standing somewhere stationary and moving your camera as still as you can, because 1/20, there's going to be a lot of motion blur.
Okay.
And if you get it right, your subject will be clear, and everything else will be blurred, looking like it's motion.
And you're staying in autofocus on your subject, so it's following the subject along. Okay, gotcha.
But sometimes you can, I mean, if they're going to be in a straight line and perfectly parallel to you, then you could probably turn it off, but that's, I usually don't.
Okay.
I usually keep it on autofocus, but you know, if I do that in boats, that's how you get like that super clear looking water on the side of the boat. I'll do that a ton. Standing in the front of the boat or the back or from the side, but that's always a fun shot to do. But just getting creative with, you know, kind of incorporating movement with long exposure. So, yeah, it's probably one of my favorite things to do. It takes up a lot of memory and it is usually pretty slow.
No, but, man, you know, the other thing too, I like about your photography that when I look on your Instagram page is you don't have the same type of photo every single time. You know how some like Instagram pages you get on, it's like that photographer mm-hmm. only does landscapes or that photographer only does close-up portraits and that's it.
Yeah.
I can definitely see on your page that you're experimenting with a lot of different things. And I think that's refreshing and unique and it makes mm-hmm. it, what am I trying to say? It makes it so not boring to the viewer, if that makes sense,
yeah.
Where if I go to Brian's page, I'm not just going to see a bunch of portraits or I'm not just going to see a bunch of really zoomed in, you know, high def photos on little tiny subjects, you know, each photo, again, what I try to do, and this is very cliche and you hear every photographer say this, is like, what are you trying to tell your audience or whoever's going to say, like, why am I taking this photo this way? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like telling the story or whatever it is. That's
yeah.
Everybody yep. says that, but it's very hard to portray behind the camera unless you get really good at it and practice it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. So I mean, actually quite a lot. Cause, I try and be unique. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty, I feel like I'm a different human being. I'm just not a weirdo in a bad way, but just a goofball, but, and not a bad way.
Right.
A good way. But, I think that has helped me a ton. You kind of, I know this is a huge cliche, but, you know, you kind of work towards your weaknesses and kind of growing up, I just felt like I was, a weirdo,
right.
Not in a bad way, but
right.
like,
just
a different dude. And, now I've come to I've grown into it and it's kind of helping me with the photography thing. Cause I have different ideas and some people and you know, my favorite thing to get is when a photographer asks me what's that in a photo, that's my favorite thing.
Okay.
That they don't know what it is. It just makes me just excited that I've came up with something creative enough to fool someone else.
Right.
That is in the realm. But that means a lot that you said that it was all different. Cause I'm a huge critic of my own work and you know, sometimes you look at a page and then you look at someone else's and it's not good for you, but you know, you critique yourself against them and try not to do that. But it's refreshing to hear that from someone else. So
yeah, man, you bet. And a few more questions for you here.
Yeah.
You know, so again, getting back to somebody listening to this, mm-hmm. tell everybody what's the camera that you shoot personally right now?
I shoot the Canon 5D Mark IV.
Okay.
Which is kind of a staple in Canon. It's thought as the one of the best photography cameras Canon made or I think any other company. I don't want to say that too far, but it's a workhorse, kind of like you said about the T6. It's a phenomenal camera. I'll probably never get rid of it. It's the only limit it has is for video, like 4K video. It kind of turns into a crop sensor then, but for photos, you can't really beat it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal camera.
If you were to give a recommendation to three lenses that you're like, I never leave home without it, they're, mm-hmm. they're must have for people to, you know, to maybe at least take a look at. And, you know, again, another thing, and I bet you'll agree with this, but just from my experience, the camera does a lot and the camera is going to give you great photos. But if mm-hmm. you're going to spend the extra money on something, mm-hmm. would you agree to throw it into the lenses side of things rather than the body?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The glass is most important. For
right.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. The, yeah, it, hands down, the glass is more important. I mean, there's limitations the camera will give you with how clean your photos will look, but that lens is super, super important. Because, I mean, that's the first thing that that moment is captured by, is that lens. So you want the best thing first, for sure.
So give us three recommendations that,
yeah,
you,
three
that,
lenses.
You,
that so
you would throw out there.
The 50 millimeter 1.8, that's a phenomenal lens. It's like $125. And I actually lost mine. So I sent it into Canon. I sent it into Canon to get fixed. And neither of us can find it. So,
oh, damn.
That's a, yeah, that's a great lens because it's only $125. So
is that glass then too?
Yeah,
it is glass. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal, it's a plastic body. The new mirrorless lens, 50 millimeter 1.8 isn't, but it's metal, but the body is plastic in the EF lens, which is just the normal Canon lens. But yeah, the 50 1.8, phenomenal. It's shallow depth of field, takes great photos. And like I said, the price point is perfect.
Does it have IS on it or no?
No.
No. Okay.
I wish. None of, the only lens I have that is the, well, I bought a 24 to 105, but the 70 to 200 has it, but.
Okay.
But anyways, the next lens I'd get is a 70 to 200, the 2.8.
Yep.
If you can, I mean, it's an expensive lens, but it's awesome. It is probably one of the best lenses that Canon makes. It is kind of pricey if you can get the 2.8. If you can't get the F4, that's still a great lens. Like I said, it's just going to be your limitation on lighting, how late you can shoot, and in regards to your shutter speed as well. But the higher your F-stop on the lens, the earlier you're going to have to stop shooting, just your limitations. And then the next lens is, I'd say wide angle. So I think it's the 16 to 35,
okay.
2.8. I don't own it. I own the 17 to 40 F4, but if I could own it, I would get the 16 to 35, 2.8.
Is that another pricey one?
Now you're talking, yeah, it's a pricey one. Are you talking more on the budget side?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think with any of these lenses that he's saying, you'll find out that there's a high-end one that's like $3,000 and there's going to be one that you can maybe afford for $800. You know what I mean? So I think folks can kind of just, I was more looking at like the range of like, what's a good one. You know, like you said, like the 50 mil is always a workhorse and it's a great lens for folks to learn on. And then if you're getting into something and you're going to, you know, further reach out, the 7,200 is great. You know, that's what I kind of wanted you to do, which is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a wide angle, a telephoto, which is that 7,200, and then a prime lens, which is just a 50 millimeter to 1.8.
Yeah, the wide photo is something that I need to invest in, and I'm a Sony shooter right now. I still have a Canon. I have a Canon 80D, which I really like, and that's the one that I kind of learned on for the most part. But then I got a screaming deal on an A6500, so I haven't shot full frame yet, which is going to be my next step up of what I want to get into. So I don't know if I'm gonna go Sony or if I'm gonna do Canon or what, but
because I need to get a video camera, so I have been debating on waiting for the R5 to get fixed from Canon or go to the Mark 3 1DX, but man, those are pricey.
Yeah, they're pricey.
I don't really want to pay that much.
Yeah, I mean, everything, any kind of hobby, I mean, it starts to get wild. There's lenses out there for like 10 grand. You know what I mean? You can get
the 800 millimeters. And
yep.
I would love to own one of those, but that's way too much.
Well, cool. So what advice would you give to someone, just kind of in closing, when it comes to, you know, hey, start here, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and then, you know, keep hammering kind of thing.
I mean, if you're just getting into it, start with a camera kit, like a T6 with the multiple lenses, and then start in automatic mode. I would like to say just go straight to manual, but just working with the camera, just taking pictures and getting a feel for if you really want to progress in it or not, but just starting automatic. And then when you're ready, go straight to manual. Mm-hmm. You can research what the AV and TV is on the Canons, or I can't remember what it is on, I think it's A and P or T and P and Nikon. And I don't know on Sony's, but, just skip. If you can go from automatic to manual, you'll be very happy. Your pictures are going to suck in manual at first, but, it's worth it. It's when you have full control over the photo, it feels a lot better and you feel more in control. So,
right.
And like I said, if I go and shoot for someone, I'll shoot 4,000 to 5,000 photos and I'll send 100. So it's not like I don't take terrible photos, but, I take enough where, there's good ones. And, yeah,
this is a little hot tip too. And I learned this the hard way is, you know, you're out there spending money on lenses and cameras and stuff like that. You got to spend the money too on the SD cards a little bit, because you can buy low quality ones and your photos, you're going to be like, is it me? Is it my camera? Is it my lens? Or you can buy ones that are decent and then you'll see your photos get a lot better and you're wondering why, you know, that 64 gigabyte little tiny piece of plastic is costing you $50 or whatever it is. There's a reason for it, is because they're going to give you a higher quality image. So what one do you kind of recommend for folks to buy?
There's a middle of the road one. It's a Lexar. I think it's a 250 megabytes a second read speed, which is how fast it'll pull stuff off the card onto your computer. And then the write speed is usually how fast it'll read on your camera. So when you take a picture, how fast it'll take that information in. That's a solid one. I think it's like, depends on the gigabytes you get, but I think it's $60.
Okay.
I don't think it's much more. And then there's one on sale right now, which is one I use, because only some cameras can only take, like the DSLRs or the SDXC, just a normal SD card, can only go up to 300 megabytes per second for a write speed.
Okay.
And when you're shooting raw photos, you want the fastest you can get, because after a while of just holding down the trigger, it's going to time out and it's going to say busy because it's writing to the SD card. Right. That one's on sale for $100 right now. So, normally it's 200.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So if you're shooting raw photos, and you're shooting high speed stuff, you want as fast as you can get.
Okay.
And, it hurts, buying those. That's for sure.
What's that one again called?
It's a Lexar. I have a Lexar Professional.
Okay. I'll try to look that up, everybody, and leave it in the show notes. That way you guys can see which one it is.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I'll send you a message with it on there. But yeah, that'd be for SDs. I'd start, you know, kind of like a middle of the road SD card. Don't get anything that's like 90 megabytes per second. I mean, you can 4K records in 90 megabytes per second on most cameras, but the faster, the better.
Okay.
And like you said, better quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be afraid to spend that $50 on whatever it is, because it's what you're going to need. The last thing you were hitting on a little bit and you're like, I want to talk about it, was live view. Can you tell the importance of shooting in live view?
So I use live view probably 80% of the time. For the fact that if you don't have a mirrorless camera and you have a DSLR, you can see what your actual picture is. You can see the real-time photo. And the biggest thing for learning manual, if you have live view, is you can mess with the settings on it and you can see how each pillar of the chair, the f-stop, the shutter speed, and the ISO speed is how it changes the picture. That is the biggest thing.
In real time, right.
In real time, you can see exactly how it changes your photo.
Yep.
And that is probably the biggest thing that taught me how to use manual, was live view.
Now, I see mine through my viewfinder. Can you see that through yours on your Canon? Or are you looking at the back, like the square screen?
The square screen. Yeah, okay. Yeah, see, okay. You have a mirrorless, right?
Right.
The 6500.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, on the DSLRs, you can't see that.
Okay.
Through that, through your viewfinder. So that's the downfall of a DSLR, is you can't see that. So if you have a mirrorless, you can just look through there and look through your viewfinder too and see the changes as well, which is super beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy that. That's the one thing I've really liked now that I've had it, you know, but and to go back to my Canon, it's a lot different. But, you know, another workhorse out there, just given my point of view from a camera that I've had, is if anybody's, you know, at the store looking, I think the Nikon D850 is good too. That's a full frame. It's a great entry full frame. And it's Nikon's been known for taking or having, you know, great photos. So anybody listening to this, that's another one. If you're looking to get into a full frame camera, I suggest the Nikon D850. I don't have it personally, but I did rent it for a day and I loved it.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. Yeah, there's so many cameras out there. Even just getting a point and shoot camera.
Yeah.
And honestly, before I bought an actual DSLR, I would edit, you know, just on my phone, just edit pictures on my phone. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had the drive for photography before that, I think I was doing that for a couple months before, but just seeing, you know, you can change stuff on your phone. You can download apps on your phone and where you can control the f-stop and the ISO and the shutter speed. So maybe check out a couple of those. I don't know any of them off the top of my head, but you know, just being able to see how those three correlate within one another is probably one of the biggest things you can learn for photography, for sure.
Thanks, man. Well, hey, thank you for taking the time to, you know, to explain a lot of this to us. I highly suggest folks, you know, follow along with you. Where can they find you at, or what kind of handle do you want to throw out there for folks to come, you know, learn more about you?
Usually for Instagram, I post almost every day, but BrianEvy_photo. And yeah, that's where I post most of my work, and working on a website. So hopefully soon it'll be out there.
Cool, man. Well, hey, everyone, follow along. If you like bass fishing, if you just like the outdoors, he does more than just fishing photos. He's got duck hunting, deer hunting, you know, a lot of, you know, just like storytelling behind, even if it's just getting up to the hunt or getting up to the fish or getting up to the cast. There's a lot that goes behind it, and Brian does a great job of capturing all that prior to, you know, the actual event or whatever that is, catching a fish or shooting a duck. But it's awesome, man. Keep up the great work. I'm a huge fan, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a good night.
Yep, you bet, buddy. You just never know, folks. You just never know. Brian Evie, everybody, that was awesome to get to know him and hear his story about how, you know, just picking up a camera and making the best of it and putting the time in and practicing and always being, you know, having that camera in your hand, what it can do. And it can lead you down new paths and open up new roads for you. And yeah, my hat's off to him. He takes great photos. I love following on his Instagram. He's got some pretty cool shots on there. I highly suggest you guys to go check it out. I'll be sure to put that in the show notes as well. But yo, in the meantime, please head on over to Instagram, Freshwater Bite, and also on the Freshwater Bite podcast page on Facebook. Give it a like, give it a listen. Go to iTunes or Spotify and, you know, cipher through some of the old episodes and the new ones coming out and subscribe. I really appreciate you guys being here and listening to all of my podcast episodes in the show. I couldn't do it without you, and I really appreciate your support. So as always, thanks for listening.